Now on Mitchell's Front Page, talking freely with Stephanie Asher.
And good morning, Steph. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Mitchell. And yourself?
Fantastic. Now, let's get stuck straight into the issues today. I want to start with this issue of the so-called tennis brat, Nick Kyrgios. I think that we just look at that and just shake our heads, because we're entitled to be proud of our sports people, aren't we?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I looked at it and I think, you know, he's brought Australia into the international spotlight for all the wrong reasons. I mean, what he said was just beyond stupid, beyond tasteless, really. Yeah. I think, for me, it was the topic and the tone of what he said, that jokey way he said, you know, sorry to be the one to tell you, mate, when he's not sorry and he's not a mate. And I thought it was just really crass, it was really nasty, and it was sort of duplicitous, that like sucking up to someone and then stealing their wallet kind of thing just makes Australians look really nasty.
Is there any justification to say that sledging is part of sport? Get used to it.
Well, funny, because we had a robust dinner discussion last weekend. It was a bit of an argument, actually, with friends, a friendly argument.
Yeah.
But my position's always been that it's poor sportsmanship. I haven't hidden that. I find sledging appalling. I've played a lot of sport. I've never experienced it in women's sport. And I did say that. You know, I've played hockey, a baseball, competitive swimming, running, horse riding, all of that. Never come across it. But then the people said, yeah, well, have you played netball? And I thought, well, no, maybe that's why I haven't. But apparently it's quite rife in netball as well. And the counter-argument was that it is part of sport, because the aim's to win, and whatever it takes to win, you do it within the rules. And, you know, you can say whatever you like to put their opponent off the game. And my position's always been that if you have to pull someone else down to win, then that's not really winning for me. So I don't think it is justifiable.
It's not good sportsmanship. But our good friends Rosa and Gina, who just did the real estate segment on their way out, were talking about the diamonds and the fact that they'd won, and what a great result that was. But they said at the moment women's athletes or female athletes seem to be better role models than what we're seeing in some of the male sports.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, it's not really even a gender comparison, I suppose, but I do think we see too much sledging. I mean, it started with cricket, and I heard Matthew Lloyd talking about it on the radio on Friday and saying that he realised he'd crossed a line in the 90s. He said it was terrible in the 90s, and it's not quite as bad as it is now. But he said he'd realised he'd said something about to somebody, and they had a mutual friend, and he said, I actually thought I wouldn't be comfortable seeing this person outside of the game. And he said, that's when I realised I'd crossed the line and I probably didn't need to do it. So, you know, I think that people need to have a bit of a hard look at themselves.
Well, it was good that he made that realisation himself, but I think a lot of people wouldn't.
Yeah.
It's just win at all costs.
Yeah, agree. And it's interesting you say about the women's sport, because I didn't see the women's AFL game yesterday. I was actually in a lock-up planning day at the surf clubs. I was looking out the window at the surf while we all did some work, but I did have my laptop and I posted something about the club on Facebook and saw a lot of comments from friends on Facebook who were watching the AFL women's game.
Yeah.
And it was all really positive. And most of these were guys. And they were all saying, you know, oh, it's a great free-flowing game. What a great game to watch. These girls are really good. And they were really impressed with the umpiring as well, which I thought was interesting. In fact, one comment was that there's not the usual drama and histrionics, they're just getting on with it, which I thought was funny.
So what do you think about women's AFL? Do you think it's going to be a viable sport in the future, and how do you see it fitting into current AFL? Would they have a curtain raiser to the current games, or how would that work?
I'm not really sure. I do think definitely it's got a place for it. It did look weird. It looked really incongruous, didn't it, to see women on the ground, but in a fascinating way. And I think it's a slightly different style of game, but it's really free flowing. I found it fascinating, only little bits that I got to see on the internet last night, and the responses that I looked at were all positive, and, you know, mostly from blokes saying it was really good. But how they actually do it, I think they're going about it the right way, in the sense I think they're thinking of, what, six teams. They want to make sure that the standard's good enough, so that's a good way to do it. But I mean, well done to the AFL. It's good to see them catching up to soccer, cricket, hockey, every other sport that's got women playing. So,
well, our sports commentators that come in after 10:30 are often talking about women's sports and the fact that the skill level is quite impressive, but, you know, the fact that there's not necessarily an outlet for them at the moment in terms of AFL. And obviously I've heard this time and time again with young people, and the fact that girls get to play Auskick, but once they get to a certain age, that's it, end of career, so to speak.
That's right. In fact, I've got a niece who's an incredibly talented sportswoman, and she's played netball. She always wanted to play AFL. She does play footy, but she's, I think she's about 23 now, so she's probably missed the boat, which is unfortunate. unfortunate. So there's going to be a whole, you know, cohort of women that have been able to play to a certain level or age and then, yeah, have to be disappointed. But good luck to the younger ones.
Now, moving on to politics, what about the Royal Commissioner Dyson Heydon?
Oh, yeah. I had a day of listening to the radio on Friday when I drove up to Melbourne and back. And look, what struck me about this situation, it's yet another own goal, isn't it, really, from this federal government. It's ridiculous. There's why on earth you'd have Liberal Party members put their own man in such a compromising position is unbelievable. And not just Liberal Party members, but barristers, QCs, who should know the law. I mean, it's a quasi-judicial role. He's not allowed to be involved in anything to do with parties, let alone whether it's a fundraiser or not. That's irrelevant. Just they put him in that position themselves.
I think the fault is more with the Liberal Party, and as you said, they put him in that position themselves, because my understanding was that he didn't know that it was a Liberal Party fundraiser. And yes, you probably should do a background check before you actually go in and start to speak and say, well, what is this function? Where is the money actually going? But you know, once he became aware of the fact that it was a Liberal Party fundraiser, they specifically said in that email exchange, which I've seen over and over again, the personal assistant says, if it's anywhere connected to the Liberal Party, we can't do it until the Royal Commission is over.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd agree with you that he's taken the right steps, but it's funny to quote Christopher Pyne in a good way for a change. he nailed it. He said, why he was invited in the first place is beyond me. And that's where I just think, unfortunately, we just have to now stand by sort of a bit helplessly, don't we, and watch the complications and the disruption to the process of the Royal Commission, which was really necessary. And I read a quote this morning saying, National Secretary of the Transport Workers Union, Tony Sheldon, wants the federal government now to repay $1 million that the union was forced to spend. And it's like, you know, he's naturally said, we demand that the money we've been forced to spend on the Royal Commission should be returned to our union so it can be used to improve the lives of transport workers and their families.
Yes.
It's like, oh, welcome to the moral high ground now.
That's right.
And it's just unfortunate because I think it was a process that we're all sick of hearing alleged union corruption, you know, clear it up one way or another, either dispute it,
Well, I was watching Brendan O'Connor on Insiders yesterday, and if you look at how they're attacking the Royal Commission, it's first of all, well, is the Royal Commission actually necessary? They say no, there's already bodies to deal with it. And then, you know, is Dyson Heydon biased and is he compromised? So there's so many different layers of argument and even if scenarios there. But he was still saying, no, this is not necessary. We don't need a Royal Commission. We have existing bodies that deal with it. And I just thought, well, they haven't really dealt with it up until now.
That's right. Totally agree with you. This was actually being dealt with, and it was you know, going through a proper process. And while you can say, yep, Dyson Heydon was biased, if the ALP was in government, they would have had a Royal Commissioner who would have had a Labor bias. You know, that's I think that's not the discussion. It's actually there was a set of rules, and the Liberal Party members have put Dyson Heydon in a position where he has broken them.
And yeah, well, that's exactly right. And again, going back to a theme of a couple of weeks ago, this sort of binary thing, like with Adam Goods, you're either with him or you're against him. There does seem to be a bit of an approach that's been taken. You're either against the Union Royal Commission or you're you know, against workers. It's one or the other. You know, if you don't love unions, you must be someone that hates the people working and part of unions. And I just don't think that's right at all, because if you look at union corruption, it's these poor union members that are getting all their money spent on things that they don't really know where it's going.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and that's where the Royal Commission was relevant. I mean, a whole range of reasons, but not least because employees need to know that their union's not up to no good, you know.
And also, as someone said the other day, the Labor Party's talking about Dyson Heydon and the fact that he's got a conflict of interest about to go and speak at this function. But they seem to turn the other way when they talk about the fact that the unions have a bit of a conflict of interest, in that in this Royal Commission we've found out that they've been taking money from employers and employees at the same time.
Yeah.
So one conflict of interest there, and that's fine. But Dyson Heydon, oh, well, that's outrageous, and he has to go.
That's politics, isn't it? We have double standards everywhere.
So, yeah, well, that's right. Question one, should Dyson Heydon go? And then if he does go, that means that the whole Royal Commission is essentially over, because all the evidence collected up until now is tainted.
Yes, which is the unfortunate part. I mean, personally, I don't think he should have to go, but if the rules are the rules and that's the way it is and he's broken them, well, then he has to, doesn't he?
And I just get the sense that, because this is the same group of people that didn't like Bronwyn Bishop, and they smelt blood over that and they got their way, Bronwyn's gone. So I just wonder if they've got a bit of a taste for that now and they're going to keep rallying, and then if they keep pushing hard enough and keep the agenda on that, that they may eventually get what they want.
Possibly. It's back to that bringing people down thing, isn't it? Instead of focusing on being the best you can be yourself.
Well, that's right. I just want to have a conversation about things like where the economy is going, but we have all these sort of sidetrack issues at the moment. Like, the unemployment rate is a really big concern for me looking at that. And obviously, you've got the government in the polls reacting to that 54-46. What do you think about that?
It's interesting. The unemployment figures, just quickly, I never know what they're actually counting as employment, though. This is where those figures are very rubbery for me. If 1 hour a week is considered employed, then really it's a furphy of a result, isn't it?
But at the same time, like, if you think 6.3% of people are applying for jobs, actively applying for jobs, and they can't get an hour a week of work, that is very concerning.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Yeah, I tend to be more of a conversationalist and just get the feel for it around, you know, what I'm hearing around the traps, and there doesn't seem to be a lot around at the moment. And there should be. There's a lot for certain people and nothing for a whole lot of people.
Well, you look at our example here, we've got people here as part of our Work for the Dole program, and a lot of them are very qualified people. They've got degrees and all that sort of thing, but they just haven't been able to find the work. And I just think that's disappointing, because you look at some of the attributes that they have here, and they've been working very hard on projects around the station, and I look at that and I say, these are things that any employer would love to have in their business.
Yeah, absolutely. It's more for the entrepreneur, I think. People need to create their own work and their own role in life. That's what I tend to operate on.
Well, that's been my path as well, but it's not for everyone.
No,
and
true.
Yeah, that's just unbelievable. But yeah, that 54-46, I think that's a bit of a response in a way to where the economy is going, because if the economy was going well, the government could say, well, at least the economy is going well. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, I'm not really ever sure about the accuracy of polls and how it actually translates on election day, but gosh, you'd ask anyone on the street right now, even the hardcore libs, and they'd say Tony Abbott's in trouble. I laughed the other day, you know, Marcus Padley, the stockbroker on ABC Radio, made a comment. It was after the same-sex marriage result, and he actually said on air that Tony Abbott's lost me, and the flood of text messages in support of Marcus Padley, who people really quite like to hate on the ABC, was hilarious. It's like, oh, wow, that's the most sensible thing he's ever said. So he's obviously losing, you know, some really core support, which would be a worry. I was imagining an election campaign, you know, we've mentioned with Malcolm Turnbull and Tanya Plibersek, or even, you know, Anthony Albanese and even Joe Hockey. It'd be a completely different picture, wouldn't it? At the moment, it's just got a really unpleasant vibe around.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think it would be good to see some other figures in place, absolutely. But I just think at the moment the government doesn't have much control over the narrative. They seem to be just responding to things like Bronwyn Bishop and the union situation, you know?
Yeah, agree. There's no real proactive communication coming through.
And they also were saying on Insiders yesterday, and I thought this is a very apt comment, where they said, you know, you've got to have these reforms in place if you want to get the economy moving. And there's things that we would look at and say, like, we want to see changes to taxation or to industrial relations. But those are very big reforms, and you've got to bring the people with you. And at the moment, the government doesn't really have the credibility to prosecute an argument, I don't believe.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there's climate change and that whole conversation as well. I think that's, as you said earlier, that's going to be a big election piece, isn't it? I'd be very interested to hear what Libby Coker's going to say.
I'm looking forward to it tomorrow. Yeah. So I think that's the beginning. The other thing, of course, as you mentioned, there was the same-sex marriage situation. I've been saying over and over again that I think a plebiscite, or at least going to the electorate with a mandate, is the way to go. I've never been a big fan of people just having a free vote and being down to the parliamentarians to decide. But what do you think about all that situation? Is this the way forward, a plebiscite, to maybe take some of the politicisation out of the issue?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the point. It's such a shame for the actual people involved in this that it's become such a political topic. And look, history says a referendum will result in a no. And my original thoughts months and months ago was, I'll just have a referendum, you know, people seem to support it. But the people pro-same-sex marriage were like, no, that's not going to work, It needs to be a plebiscite. So I think, referendum would be expensive, but it would attract a lot of negative vibe around the issue that isn't there. So plebiscite makes perfect sense.
But also, I don't want to see changes to the constitution unless it's 100% necessary.
Agree. And as you said, I don't think the position should really be about the cabinet or, you know, in Parliament, certainly Tony Abbott's cabinet. They're all Catholic men, so they're not going to be in any way supporting, as they've proven. So,
but also the thing for me is that there are still some people in the Labour Party that don't support it, because they've said they're not going to have a binding vote. So if you can't get the party that says we're progressive to support it, you've got no hope at all with the Conservatives.
Yeah.
Get exactly. used to it. So let's have a plebiscite, let the people decide, and then after that, whoever forms government can legislate. But at the moment, just the politicisation and people getting a lot of political mileage out of it. Like I just heard in the news out there before, Terry Butler saying how people are disappointed and it's going to be an election issue now, where I think a plebiscite actually makes it not an election issue, because you know whatever party you vote for, it's going to be up to the people to decide. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with you there, Mitch.
Fantastic. That's excellent. And I suppose last of all, this Dobbin and Ice Dealer hotline that the government's been talking about, do you have any thoughts on whether that will work or not?
Look, not an expert with this by any stretch. What I can see, or from what I've read, most addicts are doing a bit of dealing as well, just to fund the habit. So if the aim is to stop the supply, I'd say that that's not where to start. Meth is just so easy to make. That's what that would just send the police down a whole bunch of rabbit holes, I'd suggest. But the question with the Dobbin a dealer approach is whether it goes far enough up the chain. Are you just going to get your local neighbourhood pot supplier, you know? Are you really going to get the people with ice? According to everything I've read, we've got to address the demand, you know, educate people about what is a really dirty, nasty, one-way street drug. You know, yeah. ice is the heroin of today, and that was the one we were warned about as kids, and there were around a lot of kids and young adults in the 80s and 90s who ended up using drugs and dabbling or using a lot, but very few of them ever went near heroin. So that education campaign around, you know, this is just a really, really bad decision to make, and reduce the demand, I think, is where to start. But, you know, I'd have to know what the police think. And as you said, even if it works a little bit, by all means, do it.
In terms of the education campaign, those ads are shocking that you've seen. I've talked about this over and over again. Do you think that they're actually getting traction and working, or are we not really in the social circles to know whether it actually is?
Yeah, I'm not, and I haven't seen any, because I don't really watch TV unless it's the football.
Yeah, but they pop up on YouTube, and I think even Facebook, or maybe they just target me because I'm a young person.
Yeah, I saw a few of them, I think before they even started running. I think I saw a lot of the American ones, and their question on Facebook was, should we have ads like this? Does the shock horror factor work? And I was like, quite disturbed by them. I didn't know whether to show my kids. My kids are a bit young, but yeah, I didn't.
It works for me, but you just don't know what the mindset is of these people. But as I said, I just think anything that we can do to disrupt the supply chain has got to be tried. I think a lot of people say, oh, we should legalise marijuana because it's so out of control that the police can't do anything about it anyway, and this is the only way to get it under control. And I just think we shouldn't just lay down and let people run rampant, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree, and certainly with phones, and I would imagine a lot of the dealing's done through the mobiles, it shouldn't be hard for the police to actually, you know, check someone's phone.
Yeah, well, that's
right. If they get a heads up, so yeah.
If you look at the past messages, you get an idea pretty much straight away, I imagine.
Yeah.
So I think it's a step in the right direction, but is it enough? I'm not sure. I just don't know about how you can actually have an education campaign any more than these shock horror ads, which work for me, but I just don't know if they're cutting through.
Yeah, schools, I think, get it into schools again. Just give the kids an awareness of what's around.
Yeah, well, really good to speak to you as always, and we'll catch up again next week.
Indeed, look forward to it, Mitchell.
Thank you very much, Stephanie Asher there. We'll go to a break now on Mitchell's Front Page, and then it'll be time for Monday Sport, and so much to talk about, like James Heard, should he go?